The next 60 seconds could be like an eternity. Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. 29 October 2018 is Sunday. You're tuned into Liberty Tree. Let's talk. Or just 5 in the morning, and time, unless I had to dial 15 minutes or 15 times before the call. But that's... So what do we have today? Let's see. Our block of
instruction. Mike, can you hear me? Michael, can you hear me? AZ?
Yes.
I'm picking you up. You're garbled really bad. I don't know if it's your phone connection or something else.
I just went out completely.
Oh, you just cleaned up there for a little bit.
Hello?
There we go. Can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
All right. Well, sounds much better. You're coming in crystal clear now. I'll let you get back to it.
Okay. There's something goes on at these phones at 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if the telephone man gets over there and starts twisting wires or something, but it's really weird. But does this sound better? I'll take that as a yes. Okay, let's rewind the tape. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Today is the 29th of October, 2018. It's a Monday, and you're tuned into Liberty Tree Radio. Your mind is your primary weapon. I tried to get through War of the Flea last week, but the broadcast ended before the content. So try and wrap this up. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. And thanks for telling your friends about Liberty Tree Radio. As you all know, usually about 6 months through the year, I start running a fundraising, and that's for next year's bill. And that way, if pay it ahead of time, then it cuts the cost down about 50%. So if you go to libertytreeradio.4mg.com, the contact information is there. There's a Liberty Tree Radio, and it's P.O. Box 194, Dexter, Michigan, 48130. And the information is there at the Liberty Tree Radio site. So I appreciate it if you could help contribute monetarily to keep Liberty Tree Radio on the air. My email address is altabeeb762@hotmail.com. altabeeb762@hotmail.com. Have some border news. I'm asking myself also, of where do we go from here? Being that we're wrapping up this block of instruction on War of the Flea, a classic in insurgency guerrilla warfare. If you'd like to be part of today's broadcast, telephone is 712-432-0900. 712-432-0900. And then the mechanical voice comes on. You don't have to listen to the entire message. You can enter 957-464 pound sign. 957-464 pound sign. Now, as always, we dedicate this broadcast to Lily Grace Antoinette. Let's see. I had some random thoughts this weekend about all the things that are going on. And it's the classic, divert the attention. It just seems to be, instead of the news items coming down the pike, all of a sudden one crowds another. And we always ask ourselves, well, what's really going on, and what are they trying to distract our attention about? I don't know. Do we know? Well, you know, we had the California forest fires, and they got bumped out by Judge Kavanaugh hearings. And then we had Hurricane Florence, and then Hurricane Michael, and then the migrant rent-a-mob coming up from the south, and then the pipe bomb, I think the, no pun intended, or maybe it is, the migrant rent-a-mob blew up in their face and got bumped by this pipe bomb stuff. And then now we've got the synagogue shooting. It just seems that one thing gets pushed out of the way by another thing. Now, I heard that this Mueller report and the Russian collusion and the Steele dossier, is they're going to hold off on that until releasing it until after the election. And now there's speculation of about not even releasing it because of national security concerns. So are all these things diversions to keep us from discussing the Mueller report? I don't know. Something's going on. Now, I also find it odd that all this stuff in Gaza and Palestine, that the Israelis can sit there and just shoot randomly at Palestinians up at the border fence protesting, and it hardly gets any news whatsoever. But I wonder what would happen if we would send the military teams down to the border and just start randomly shooting these people like the Israelis do, and the people coming out of Gaza. We'll go over here, bombing runs because of some little bottle rockets being fired across the border. One thing also, now recall when El Chapo got arrested the first time, and then he escaped, and then they caught him about 2 years later. Then El Chapo Guzman escaped another time, and it was national news. Oh, the head of the Sinaloa cartel, underground, come up through his shower stall and Altiplano prison, the most secure, maximum security prison. And then they had the nationwide manhunt and et cetera, and they finally ran in the ground for a couple of months later, however long the time frame was. And then they had a great big media coverage. He's being extradited to the United States. Oh, he's going to stay in trial. Now, has anybody heard, other than here on your mind as your primary weapon, that his trial is set to begin on the 5th of November? What is that, 8 days from now, a week from now? But then again, if they would start reporting on that, then all of a sudden, because we're talking about issues south of the border, then they're going to have to start talking about the migrant mob. I just find it odd that they certainly can burn up a lot of airtime and distracting us from whatever they're trying to distract us from. Now, also, I want to point something out and be very careful on what the media tells you, because we know for a fact they're very ill-informed, that you can check it out for yourself. Now, go to borderlandbeat.com, and go back to the 3rd of July, 2018, over on the right-hand side of the main page. They have kind of a rundown of the more recent articles, not in the main content part of it, but then they break it down by months. And instead of having to scroll back from October all the way back to July, you can just click on July, or maybe you could click on June and then scroll forward because it's at the beginning on the 3rd of July. that according to the federal government and their exculpatory, their Brady material that they've released to the defense team, that El Chapo Guzman never was and is not ever the leader of the Sinaloa cartel. News media.
Mike, I think we lost you again. Oh, yeah, we lost Mike altogether. Okay, hang on here, guys. We're going to take a quick break while we wait for Mike to reconnect. So just give us a second. Something's going on with his phone line.
I love what you two are doing with this house.
So we'll take a quick break, and we will be right back, hopefully after this.
Thank you.
again. Okay, let's try this for the 34th time this morning, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know where the needle dumped.
Hang on, sorry, Mike. That's
okay.
We lost you. You were just thinking about how the one guy was not the leader of the Sinaloa cartel.
Okay. All right, very good. So the trial of El Chapo Guzman is coming up on the 5th of November, about 1 week from now. So I'm just kind of wondering if it's going to be covered, because then that's going to bring attention to the convoy. And anyway, we'll see. I apologize. There seems to be, and I don't think it's on my end, and I don't think it's on Edward's end. I think it's somewhere in the middle. But the phone seems to work every other time until 8 o'clock in the morning rolls around. And it's not only here. The same thing goes on when I do the broadcast on Thursday and Friday over at the Micro Effect. So please bear with us, ladies and gentlemen. Testicle difficulties, please stand by. Now, I try to wrap up our lesson on War of the Fleet about the guerrilla movements in the Third World. And we had started discussing these things on the town hall meeting, about a week ago, maybe 9 days or so ago. And at the base of it, it's, number one, we can either deal with the problem down there, or we can deal with the problem up here. And it's much easier to deal with the problem down there. Now, bear in mind, when Tabor wrote War of the Flea, published it in 1965, and it appears to be that he's quite prescient in his predictions about dealing it with down there or dealing with it up here. I don't know, maybe we should all just save up our money and go buy land down in Honduras and Guatemala, because they're all here, and there should be quite a bit of land that's available down there, because ain't nobody down there. Because, you know, the monopoly of the arable land of Latin America by big estates is such that some 10% of the landowners own 90% of the land, stretching out in huge latifundios of thousands of acres, worked by laborers who live in shacks or barracks and are paid a pittance, if they're paid at all, while the remaining 10% of the land is fragmented into tens of thousands of mini fundios, too small to provide the narrow margin of profit that would permit the purchase of fertilizer, of agricultural tools, or any means of improvement. Millions of Latin Americans live without buying or selling on the fringes of society in which they have no share or voice. Hundreds of thousands in the equatorial forests are mere squatters who burn off a patch of jungle, subsist on meager root crops, which it produces until the thin soil is exhausted, and then they move on to burn another patch elsewhere, following a primitive pattern that was old when the conquistadors came to the New World. Our population pressures and starvation in the countryside drives hundreds of thousands of peasants to the cities to seek employment, and the new pattern of misery is found. As an example, in Rio de Janeiro, the slums that line the hills ringing the cities are called favelas, the waterless shacks of which they consist, one atop of the other, house a quarter of a million Brazilians, inhabitants of a human jungle which even the police fear to enter. In Santiago de Chile, the slums that surround the capital are appropriately named calanipas, meaning mushrooms. In Lima, they are called, ironically, the City of God. In Caracas, they are rancheros, and all of these terms signify the rat plague disease-ridden, lawless shantytowns of the subculture in which millions of men, women, and children live without a foreseeable future unless it is in the hope of revolution. Poverty does not by itself engender revolution, but poverty, side by side with progress, creates a new amalgam. The hope of social change, stimulated by even a little education, produces a new social phenomenon. The ambitious poor, the rebellious poor, the cadres of a revolution, who have nothing to lose and see much to gain around them. Without a clearly articulated cause, without forceful and persuasive leaders, without political organization.
Join Mark and Don for Weapons Wednesday, where you'll learn how to use everything from your bare hands to your average AR-15.
The 12-gauge autoloader.
Sure.
The 45 long slide.
Yep.
With laser sighting.
You betcha.
The Uzi 9mm.
Yes, sir.
A plasma rifle in the 40-watt range.
What, are you crazy?
Wrong.
Okay. We'll talk about that, too. So whatever question you have about whatever weapon you have, call Mark and Don on Weapons Wednesday. And remember, your mind is your first best weapon.
We all need to prepare ourselves. You might have the food, water, gold, and silver, but ask yourself, are you truly prepared? That's why you need to visit MaineMilitary.com. MaineMilitary.com carries everything you need. Gas masks, fire starter kits, high-capacity magazines, chemical suits, military surplus items, and much more. Do you own a firearm? MaineMilitary.com has a large selection of pistols and rifles suited for your needs. Are your local stores sold out of ammunition? Call or visit them today for prices on hard-to-find ammo and bulk ammo orders. You don't need to worry about having a military surplus store in your area because MaineMilitary.com is the only store you'll ever need, all from the comfort of your computer. Visit them online today at MaineMilitary.com. That's Maine, like the state, military.com.
From behind enemy lines and occupied territories, Liberty Street Radio is asking for your help. Keep hosts like Mark, Don, Spike, BC, Joe from the Carolinas, and Ed the AK-47 on the air by donating to LTR's end of the year bill. Many hands make for light work, so go to libertytreeradio.4mg.com to help keep LTR in this fight. That's libertytreeradio.4mg.com.
It's a conspiracy, I tell you. It's a conspiracy. C-O-N-spiracy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is testing my very limited patience today. It's just the way it is. please stand by. Testicle difficulties, please stand by. So when we approximately, we were discussing some of the figures of the population explosion in Central America and the actual declining of the agricultural production. Because while the poor have been getting poorer, they've also become increasingly aware of the wealth around them and the potential in which they might share. There has been, along with the population explosion, a revolution of communication, and out of it has come what's been aptly described as a revolution of rising expectations. In Rio, a forest of television antennas rise over the favelas. The slum dwellers are bitterly poor, but not so poor as they lack the means to see the industrial progress and the affluence that surrounds them, and not so poor as to fail to understand that promises are being made to them, political programs invoked in their name, and to begin to stir with impatience for the day when the promises will be fulfilled. In the labor barracks of the Brazilian Northeast, radio brings messages of the Cuban Revolution, the fighting in Vietnam and the Congo, of riots in Panama and Harlem, and the plantation workers are poor, but not so poor to know what other men like themselves are doing and how they are setting about it and with what results. Awareness creates, if not a revolutionary class, then a revolutionary base. Economic progress, however limited, is a revolutionary force in itself. Popular education, slowly spreading, stimulates emulation and social ambition. Commerce and industry, on however inadequate a scale, give rise to a certain social mobility. New political alignments are formed. New wealth, edging aside the old feudal elite, strives for political power. A middle class is created. Revolutionary leadership is found first in the poorer and more ambition or idealistic sectors of the middle class, then in the spreading new class of poor white-collar workers who, scorned by both the middle class and the elite, unable to make common cause with them or to aspire to their privilege, follow the only avenue. And just make sure, yep, looks like we're still here. Unable to make a common cause with them or to aspire to their privilege, follow the only avenue open to their ambition and form a radical political opposition, taking the cause of the humble and the disenfranchised as their own. Now, thus spreading misery creates a powerful revolutionary base, and progress provides it with incentive and leadership. Political organization follows. Its slogans, its selection of causes, are indicated by the social circumstances. And given the oppressive social and economic conditions of Latin America, it's not surprising to find that the ideological basis of most radical opposition movements, there is at once Marxist, nationalistic, and stridently anti-Yankee. Now, the United States, with its great investment in Latin America, its control over vital industries, the price control with which it exerts over the raw materials that the area sells, and equally over the manufactured commodities that they must buy. Now, in its history of intervention in Latin American politics, is obviously tailored to the villain's role. As if it were not enough, Washington has openly declared itself the enemy of liberation movements in Latin America since the Cuban Revolution by avoiding and avowing its intention to intervene militarily if necessary to prevent any communist takeover of the hemisphere. Now, since the Latin Americans know very little that almost any change likely is to be prejudicial to the United States' economic intentions or political hegemony, will be viewed as a communist takeover, communism, socialism, and anti-imperialism being more or less equivalent terms in North American lexicon, it follows that war is already declared. The first skirmishes have, in fact, begun. sporadic guerrilla fighting has long been in progress in Venezuela, Guatemala, and Colombia. Outbreaks have been reported in Bolivia, Chile, Peru, and Argentina, and certainly more will follow. The 2 million Peronistas ballot in the last Argentine presidential election can scarcely be taken as voters of confidence in U.S. leadership or in the ambitions, but slow-moving and inadequate alliance for progress, however good its intentions. It would be an exaggeration to say that Latin America is, at this writing, on the brink of revolution. The Alianza para de Progreso, despite its faults, has had a palliative effect in some areas. Temporarily successful American intervention in Brazil has checked that country's drift to the left. The Latin American communists are deeply divided, as are the national communist parties everywhere in the Western world. The old line communist parties in Latin America, which might have expected to provide leadership to proletarian or peasant movements, are bogged down by their own conservatism, ineptitude, dogmatism, and opportunism. In many instances, they have found it accommodations with the incumbent government and are content to do nothing and grow fat. And a revolutionary following enjoyed for a brief period by the Latin American Fidelistas has waned in proportion with the failure of the Cuban Revolution to fulfill its first bright promise. Many who at first looked with favor on Fidel Castro, exhilarated by his defiance of the Yankee Colossus and sympathetic to the plight of the beleaguered Cubans, have since been alienated by his alliance with Moscow and his involvement in Cold War policies. And the missile crisis of October 63 being taken as the chilling object lesson of that involvement. And the fate of the Cuban middle class on an island growing gray and austere since the first heady triumph of the revolution has been a disillusionment to the middle class Latin Americans. The revolutionary base and the revolutionary ferment of Latin America nevertheless exist as potential realities, and the seeds of popular insurrection have been sown broadcast. Its techniques are readily available to all, and although large-scale revolution may not be imminent, it seems safe to predict that within the next decade, the United States is certain to face grave challenges to its leaderships, its diversified economic interests, and perhaps even to its security in the Western Hemisphere. Need one add, and in the rest of the underdeveloped world. Central America could become an American Vietnam tomorrow. Brazil could become, just checking, yep, still appears that we're on. Good. Now, Brazil could become an American Congo, Venezuela with its great petroleum wealth, an American Algeria, and the Andes, to quote Fidel Castro, a greater Sierra Maestra. So we have to ask, what is to stop it? Given the overall backwardness of the area and the booming birth rate, economic plans on the order of the Alliance for Progress can only be palliative agents, not long-term cures. Land reform is the outstanding obvious first step. Industrialization, impossible without markets. The elimination of illiteracy, the massive capital investment on an unprecedented scale, is the next. But before these giant steps toward progress can even be considered, radical political changes must precede them. So long as the United States, in alliance with unrepresentative, oppressive, and corrupt governments, stands in defense of vested interests in Latin America, including its own great exploitative investment, so long will the tap the remain to the it's going to tap the remains in the bottle, and the revolutionary pressures continue to build within until the inevitable explosion. true, dictatorial governments can be bolstered by military and economic aid. Cooperation can be obtained by bribes and economic coercion. Incipient guerrilla movements can be stamped out before they begin. The first larval stage is indeed the only stage at which they can be stamped out. But conditions remain the same. Others are certain to arise. So what is needed, then, is an entirely new long-term approach to the problem of U.S.-Latin American relations. A logical beginning would be the abandoned so-called military aid, the SOC granted in the name of hemisphere defense to maintain the goodwill of military oligarchs, whose only need of tanks and warplanes is to intimidate the population they normally represent. The next step, also logical, but perhaps scarcely feasible in view of the domestic political realities of the United States, would be to declare an economic New Deal for Latin America. Such a New Deal would mean an end to the lopsided commercial relationships, the unilateral trade pacts, the economic extortion by means with which the United States industrialists dominate Latin American markets and the United States consumers fix the price for the raw materials, the minerals and cash crops on which Latin America depends for its lives. The third and most radical step, and the hardest, would be simply to embrace the revolution. Revolution cannot be suppressed. It may be channeled. Does it not make sense to seek to channel it in the least damaging, most helpful direction? Since in most Latin American countries, it is the middle class and the growing classes of the white-collar proletariat rather than the workers of the landless peasants that exercise revolutionary leadership. And the chances that are good are that in many instances popular movements could be diverted into more or less bourgeoisie liberal channels. In other words, that oligarchs and military dictatorships could be replaced by liberal democracies based on the limited socialism we mean when we refer to welfare government and the revolutionary pressures siphoned off by means of certain radical reforms, of which land reform would be the most obvious and immediate. Failing such solutions, the choice would still remain between democratic socialism and its stand and its the Marxist-Leninist alternative. Nor does this exhaust the range of choices. On the radical left still stand two or three revolutionary groups. One, the old-line communist parties, devoted to Moscow and their Stalinist pro-Peking offshoots, the more militant of the Fidelistas, who also find an affinity for Peking, and the National Socialist, using the label in its purest sense, who, while strongly influenced by the Cuban experiment, lean to a kind of military Titoism, without Cold War commitments. Now, looking back to the Cuban experience since 1958, one sees that the United States at every stage failed to pick up options superior to those that remained as the range of choice narrowed. In 1957 and throughout 1958, Washington might have choked the Cuban Revolution to death with cream by openly repudiating Batista and welcoming or actually assisting the democratic, then bourgeoisie liberal, reformist movement led by Fidel Castro. To have done so would have been to strengthen the liberal nationalist element that supported Castro and to have discredited the anti-Yankee extremists and especially the old-line communists for the Partido Socialista Popular, or at the time not at all popular with the 26th of July movement. Now, a choice still existed through 1959 and well into 1960. And it was too late to abort the revolution, and positive steps would have entailed the sacrifice of considerable immediate U.S. dollar interest. The Cuban land reform inaugurated by the Fidelistas was a crying necessity as well as a plague that would have been could not have been ignored. But Washington would have been wiser to subsidize it than to fight it. Further, expropriations of American property might and probably would have followed. At its worst, however, the loss related to the socialization of the Cuban economy would have been only a limited dollar loss, and much of the value might have been retained. A market for U.S. products then ranked as the sixth largest in the world. Important commercial and banking relations and assured ineffectual sugar supply, above all, an amicable if independent Caribbean neighbor instead of a hostile Cold War base. Now, to embark instead on a campaign of diplomatic and economic strangulation was not merely to cut Cuba adrift, but to drive her into the only direction in which she could go, towards utter dependence on the Soviet Union. And it makes no difference to argue that Castro and his followers may have wished or even did wish to go there. The fact is that it could have been prevented. Every geographical and economic consideration leads to that inevitable conclusion. Tomorrow or next year or the year after that, similar choices will present themselves. They are already indicated in one or more of the countries in the hemisphere that North Americans still consider to be theirs. The revolution certainly will not stop with one country or a few. The entire underdeveloped third world is in transition, and it is all moving in the same direction under the multiple pressures of economic and social political necessity. The United States can make the accommodation that it must make with the forces of the revolution, or it can, in the end, be destroyed. To take the course of the accommodation will not be merely to acquiesce to the inevitable, but to declare a partnership with it. And that means, one, to declare diplomatic and economic war on the Latin American oligarchs have been declared war on Cuba, or to break with those governments strong enough to resist or retaliate. Two, to actively assist revolutionary groups expediently selected with arms and funds and advisors acting on the premise that in our present military aid program for military dictatorships, our advisors in South Vietnam, our weapons airdrops in the Escambule of the Bay of Pigs invasion can be sanctioned under the international law or morally justified in violation of it, better and more expedient causes can be even better justified. Thirdly, and lastly, to openly proclaim the United States a champion of revolution so as to steal the thunder of Moscow and Peking and offer the emerging third world a viable alternative to Marxist-Leninist totalitarianism on one hand and Western imperialism styled free world leadership on the other. Now, the expedient course might, even at this late stage, apply to Cuba. If aid to Tito, then why not aid to Castro? There is a contradiction here that needs to be sorted out. Tito never had an atomic missile base, true, but then never having been invaded, he seems never to have felt the need. It may be that Castro can safely be left to stew in his own juices. Cuban isolated is Cuba disarmed, perhaps. But Latin America is not Cuba. It is not a continent larger and more populous than ours and cannot long be left to ferment without producing a great stench and devastating explosions. To stand against revolution in the Western Hemisphere will be to embark on a profitless and intolerable war that cannot be won. It will be to choose rioting, strikes, sabotage, bloody insurrections, and political economic chaos on an unprecedented state, culminating invariably in a series of grueling and protracted guerrilla campaigns from Mexico to Argentina, involving more and yet more American troops in endless offensives without objectives, battles without victories, sacrifice without compensation, and ultimately defeat at a cost too fearfully high to even remotely be reckoned. And then to compromise with revolution may well be to surrender the great part of some $20 billion of vested interest in Latin America. And that is indeed the outlook. It will mean, besides, to sacrifice much of the economic advantage of the lopsided trade treaties and coolie labor on which the substantial part of our prosperity is based. On the other hand, the prospective loss could be considered as another sort of investment. Great as the immediate dollar loss would be, it would be merely match the $20 billion that have already been earmarked for the Alliance for Progress, and the long-term dividends would be far greater than any amount of dollars. They would consist, first of all, of continued certain access to the vast supplies of raw materials of which the United States industry is absolutely dependent. Continued trade on a more equitable basis would be guaranteed, and with it the promise of expanding markets for American manufactured products and agricultural produce based upon the rising wages and consumptions of millions freed from peonage and brought into the 20th century. And finally, there would be the element of security which seems to preoccupy our policymakers. And it is inconceivable that the United States can wish to live in a divided hemisphere, half of it hostile to us, yet the only security to be obtained in this respect would be based on a genuine hemispheric co-prosperity, and that in turn it must be inescapably be based on the social justice which will be the battle cry of the gathering Latin American revolution. On one hand, progress, prosperity, and security. On the other hand, certain disaster. There is only one outcome to guerrilla war, and that is revolution. And there is only one remedy, and that is peace. Some will call it surrender. If so, it is the surrender of force to reason based on the understanding that no people can be subdued or kept in subjugation who do not accept defeat. That's my point, and I'm sticking with it. We can either deal with the problem equally and equitably in Latin America, or we can deal with a convoy of 17,000 desperate people coming here. I understand the part of about, well, this is our money. We shouldn't be giving them money at all. They need to go out and get it. I see that point. But I presented my parts. And like once again, I say that Tabor seemed to be quite prescient in his predictions when he published War of the Flea in 1965. Now, I know that this publication in a PDF Adobe file has made its way now, but I'm not exactly 100% sure if it's been posted on the Liberty Tree Radio Discord page. This publication, War of the Flea, is a classic in guerrilla warfare, revolutionary movements, unconventional warfare, insurgency. And it starts off by kind of going over what is and what isn't. Then it goes in a case-by-case basis with Fidel and General Grievous and Mao Zedong and quite a few, and Che Guevara, and Vietnam, the Congo, all these different revolutionary movements. And then it comes up to the summary at the very end of what we've just covered here on either we can deal with it down there equitably or we can deal with it up here. I would highly recommend that not only you get War of the Flea, not only load it on your computer, but take the time to actually print it out and take the extra time to go down to the big box store and get some of the vinyl pages, the vinyl document protectors, instead of punching holes in the edges of the paper, and put it in a binder and spread it around to your friends, your websites, put it on your Facebook or Twitter or however that stuff goes, and spread this around and ask these people. And some people won't read all 125 pages of it, but they can read the last 10 pages of the summary and ask them, well, what's going on? We can either deal with it down there, or we can deal with it up here. And since we didn't deal with it down there, now we're spending billions of dollars by educating, medical, maternity, security, incarceration of all these criminal elements that could have been handled down in Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Brazil, Argentina, and the list in Venezuela, on and on and on and on. Grenada, how much does it cost? A small investment has vast returns on your investment. I don't know. Is it too late now with this explosion of communications, when years before people, it was word of mouth or newspapers, the underground, the bamboo telegraph, the coconut telegraph. But now all of a sudden it seems like everybody's got computers and cell phones, text messages, instantaneous communications with anywhere in the world. So we've studied it. I've given you the presentation. I'd certainly like to have our tax money stay here and help the United States. But then again, with power comes responsibility. I don't know. I just don't know, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't know about the whole part of about it. I'm pretty sure we're a little bit past the top of the hour, 1 or 2 minutes, so music should be coming in here. I apologize for our technical difficulties today. I don't know what's going. It's somewhere in the middle part. It's a conspiracy, I tell you, C-O-N-spiracy. Today is the 29th of October, 2018. It's a Monday, and you're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. And please help keep Liberty Tree Radio on the air. Join together with the band, The Who. Thank you guys for taking the time to tune in today. Thank you, Edward, for your help.
I don't remember.